BSO principal flutist Elizabeth Rowe joined the Boston Symphony Orchestra in 2004 and holds the Walter Piston Principal Flute Chair. Prior to joining the BSO, she held title positions with the orchestras of Fort Wayne, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C., and was a member of the New World Symphony in Miami Beach, Florida.
Noted for insightful teaching, Ms. Rowe attracts flute students from around the country to her lessons and master classes. She currently serves on the faculties of the New England Conservatory and the Tanglewood Music Center and is a regular guest artist at the National Orchestral Institute of Music and the New World Symphony.
She is soloing in an all-Bach program on Friday conducted by Pinka Zuckerman, and she joins us now. Elizabeth, I can't just thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having
me. Been on the show a few years ago, and it's nice to have you back. So as far as this all-Bach program, how is it going? Like, give us a sense of when you start your preparation and get ready for Friday night.
So I start my own individual preparation months ahead of the performance, but we are beginning our official preparations as an orchestra tomorrow morning with a rehearsal, and I'm meeting with Pinka Zuckerman later today to sort of start to get a little bit organized between the two of us as far as how we're going to handle the interactions in this piece, because it is for violin and flute and harpsichord as soloists.
Do you feel lucky when you get a piece that you really know well? You know, I say, oh, good, I don't have to really kill myself on this one.
You know, it works both ways. I really enjoy coming back to something that's familiar and sort of exploring new approaches to it. And I'm also very much interested in the challenge of new repertoire as well.
But you have, but what's fascinating to me is you have the day job. You have you're sitting there in the orchestra every night when there's a performance. So this is an intramural sport.
It is, and this week actually is a great example of that, because I'll be performing tonight with the Tanglewood on Parade concert this evening as principal flute in the orchestra. I'm soloist on Friday night, but also on Saturday night you'll find me back in the orchestra as well as Sunday afternoon.
So what's it like to be principal?
Are there perks?
Well, it's a tremendous honor to be the principal flutist of the Boston Symphony. I would say that every role in the orchestra has its own unique set of responsibilities and perks if you have it.
Well, what are the responsibilities of the principal flutist?
Well, artistically, there's the nature of the writing for that position. So the principal flutist is given the solo lines, let's say, within the flute section in the orchestra. So there may be three or four flute players on stage, but if there's going to be a large solo line, it's going to be written for the principal flutist. So that's part of what I do in that chair. And then there's some sort of behind the scenes section.
Paperwork?
A little bit of paperwork, yes.
There is fill out forms and reports?
A little bit, not a lot, but there is some of that.
So when they interview a new one, in other words, let's say there's a vacancy.
Yes.
Do you get in on that?
I mean, a replacement for principal flute?
No, for another flute.
On the blind audition.
Yes, and actually this is very exciting, because we have just granted tenure to our second flutist in the orchestra after a long process of holding auditions for that position and then selecting a really wonderful player and then working through the probation period with our new second flutist. And now we have a fully tenured flute section, so we're all four here.
So is it like being a professor that, you know, some guy guys retire and stay after they get tenure?
No.
Do
we coast once we have tenure?
Yeah.
No, we do not. And in fact, often I've found, at least to be the case for myself and for a lot of my colleagues, that once you have that security of the position, that you feel more free to really express yourself and to take more chances and take more risks artistically. And it's a wonderful thing.
When you look at the program that you are involved in on Friday night, do they come to you, or do you say to them, you know, this would be great? Is that a conversation?
In this case, they came to me, and I think it was the idea came from Pinka Zuckerman, and so our artistic management came to me and said, Pinka Zuckerman mentioned that he would like to play this piece with you on this program, and what do you think about that? And I said, that sounds marvelous.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
And is there ever a time where you would say, wow, this is a wonderful piece, I would love to do this, and you whisper into Tony Fogg's ear, and maybe that happens?
Sure, that works that way sometimes as well. Most of the time that I've been lucky enough to perform in front of the orchestra have been either repertoire that a conductor has brought to the program. We did this interesting piece by Gabriella Franck, I think it must have been two summers ago, on a music of all inspired by the Andes. So there was a lot of interesting repertoire there. And so that was a new piece to me and to the orchestra that the conductor suggested. And so it works both ways.
So here's a troublemaking question. You have in this orchestra the best musicians in the world.
Correct.
Any one of which could stand up and do a wonderful job. And yet, you know, the whole idea is you have to bring in visiting firemen from other places to do that.
Sure.
Is there any tension on that issue?
Not at all. No. I think that we are inspired by the guest soloists that come to play with us, and they really are truly magnificent musicians. And I think those of us in the orchestra who are lucky enough to have the opportunity to also do the same feel lucky to be in the same position as these wonderful sort of international soloists who make a career of performing in front of orchestras.
And so you're never sitting back there with your eyes shut saying, I could do that.
No. And in fact, I think what it provides us is just a exposure to so many different styles of musicians, and we're very, very lucky to have that caliber of musician come to play with us.
And not that they don't have security, but you have again the day job. It is a responsibility in and of itself, and it would seem that would have security and stability that being on the road every night would not have.
Absolutely. And that's one of the really wonderful benefits of a great orchestral position, because we have a tremendous artistic experience on stage with our colleagues and with these guest conductors and soloists. And we also can go home to the same house every night.
Place every night, right.
Yes.
And yet, there's somebody sitting in that orchestra, the Berlin Symphony, as I say, boy, I'd like to get her as the soloist for us. So here you have the day job.
Right.
Do you ever get excused to go do that?
Sure, that can happen, absolutely. And that's always a really fun thing to do, but it is always in the context of having the BSO as our primary home, and that there's just a really wonderful stability to that.
When you sit down and you work with your other soloists, and you all get your moment to shine, mm-hmm. but what are the conversations like between you of how to creatively do it and musically do it?
In a piece like this Bach Brandenburg that we're talking about, where there's multiple soloists, mm-hmm. that's an interesting conversation, because it's more typical that you find one single soloist in front of the orchestra, and then the collaboration is more about the soloist with the accompaniment, and the orchestra being the accompaniment, and the conductor being the sort of liaison between the soloist and the orchestra. In a case like this, where there are multiple soloists, then there is often a really interesting and fun collaboration between the two soloists to decide issues of phrasing and interpretation and dynamics, and it's just a give and take and a back and forth. So it's a nice opportunity to it almost in a way bridges the gap between chamber music and solo performance, because there is a sort of a chamber music collaborative element to the solo lines.
Have you ever been in a situation where it wasn't nice? In other words, where there are strong personalities on either side, and you know, and you
hit a wall. Not in the last decade, I would say. Yeah. I certainly have experienced that in maybe in previous circumstances, but not
That's
since I've been
answer.
With the
not
Boston
on,
Symphony.
Not in the last decade.
Not since I've been with the Boston Symphony, no.
And that speaks to the professionalism, obviously, of the entire organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When you go out and see how other orchestras operate, does it give you a sense of... we got a really good thing. I mean, does it help you appreciate even more what you got going on here?
Without question. I feel like the Boston Symphony is an incredibly unique organization right now, especially at this moment in time, because not only are we artistically at the top of the heap, and we can sort of say that without being immodest, because I feel like it's universally acknowledged. But we have a degree of financial stability that's pretty rare at this point in the industry, and we also are blessed with two incredible performance venues, both back in Boston at Symphony Hall, which is just one of the most wonderful acoustical environments in the world, and then here out at Tanglewood, where, you know, it surprises many people to know that the acoustics over there in that shed, which is not an architecturally gorgeous building, acoustics are wonderful for us. They're just great. So when we come out here, it's not like we say, oh, gee, here we go. You know, we're playing in an incredible acoustic environment out here. We have wonderful audiences that being surrounded by these gorgeous acres of beauty. It's incredibly inspiring.
So what's it like to be here in the summer? Where do you stay? What do you eat? What goes on?
The farmers markets are quite wonderful.
Yes, there you go.
They? Yes, yeah. A lot of great tomatoes and all sorts of other great.
Well, it's a sweet corn time.
It sure
melons and corn, mm-hmm. Nothing better.
Yep.
You know, when we've talked to string players about this, about the impact of the weather and certainly heat and humidity on a violin or a cello. Is there anything to a flute?
Yes, absolutely. And it's been, we've certainly seen some examples of that in the recent days.
It's been all over the place.
Over the place, and quite hot and humid for our last few performances. Two important things has happened. One, with temperature, the instrument changes. The instrument itself changes temperature, and that affects the intonation of the instrument. So as the instrument gets warmer, our intonation goes higher, and as it gets colder, we go lower.
How do you tune it? I know, as a trumpet player, I know what to do. What do you do with a flute?
Well, similar thing. You can lengthen or shorten the length of the instrument, and so that will impact the intonation. As you go to extremes at other end, then it starts to throw off relationships within the instrument too, so things get complicated, and every instrument reacts to a different degree and in different directions, actually, in the weather. So strings go one way, winds go the other. And then also for the flute specifically, when it's really darn hot and you're under those stage lights and you're, you know, sweating because it's just a zillion degrees out there, the flute literally can slip off your face if you're not careful.
Really?
Yeah. So that's a big deal. It's a you know, traction of the flute on your chin is a big deal. So,
You know, Elizabeth, I have to say, I write down lines that I absolutely love, and I think you win for the summer. The flute can slip off your face.
Yeah, I like it.
I like that a lot. And as far as... can you take care of most of those problems? I mean, obviously not the sweating part, but the instrumental part, you can take care of that before and during, you know.
During. If you had a tiny little camera focusing on the flute section or on the wind section in general, you'll notice people making adjustments to their instruments as the concert progresses.
Well, that's what you're doing.
But
yes,
as they
exactly.
play?
No. Well, and as you play, there are also some subtle things that you can do as well to adjust the intonation. Absolutely. So we're constantly working to try to keep in the right place.
So how important are your teeth in playing the flute?
You asked me this years ago when I was on this show.
You have wonderful teeth, which is why I asked that.
It keeps the flute from slipping off your face.
No. You know, I will say this. It doesn't really matter what your teeth are like, although we are quite picky about our dentists because we don't want anybody messing around with anything.
A little extra air leaking through, you know, the bicuspids wouldn't
so
be right.
I never thought of that.
Sure.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
The winds and the brass in the orchestra are quite picky about our dental work.
Is there a team dentist that travels with the orchestra?
No.
Quick, get the dentist!
No, but you know, we have been on tour in Europe and in other places where we've had dental emergencies and, you know, you do make some effort to get somebody who was going to be conservative.
We have a maestro on deck, but I am curious because Alan always asks this question again of violins and cellos of the price and the value of the instrument. But what does a flute run? A great flute.
Well,
that the principal of the Boston Symphony Orchestra would play. Like what?
It's a little bit of a complicated answer because flutes are made out of different materials, and one chooses your material based on an.
Like, do you want young or old?
It's not like string instruments where the old instruments are really the wonderful ones, and string instruments are valued more almost as artwork than they are. But flute is more like a car. So you can get a nice, good one that was built in the last 20 years, and you're great. Some people prefer instruments that were built in maybe the 50s, but we're not talking about hundreds of years ago.
Okay.
And you can do anything from a $10,000 flute up to a $25,000 or $30,000 flute. You can even spend less than $10,000 and and have a very fine instrument. So it's a whole different ball game than the string instruments.
Well, that's fascinating. Elizabeth Rowe is the principal flute chair with the Boston Symphony Orchestra. She is going to be performing on Friday night in an Allbach program conducted by Pinchas Zukerman. You can find out more information by going to tanglewood.org. Elizabeth Rowe, you are wonderful, and I thank you so much. It's a delight to have you back on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world this week and throughout the rest of the season.
Thank you so much.
Great.
Delight. Thank you so much. You're listening to the Roundtables Live, Tanglewood broadcast on WAMC Northeast Public Radio.